Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, we had our Justice Fund dinner on yesterday, and we had a packed house. You couldn't squeeze another person in. It was beautiful. Jeremiah Wright, Reverend Dr. Jeremiah Wright, told it. He told the truth. He told the story. Never before in the history of mankind has anything ever been like this before. I tell you, it was a tremendous outing. And I'm just telling you just like it is. Also, this week, the NAACP once again had made contact with Reverend Edward Pinckney. I'm enjoying every single minute of this. Once again, they claim my behavior is too bad, too terrible, too horrible to even mention. But I'm happy today. I'm happy that we're pounding the NAACP. We now have 2,521 people have burned the NAACP card. I'm expecting 27 people to burn the NAACP card today. But we can continue to do the things that need to be done. I'm excited. I'm excited to be here today because we have showed the people what we can do when we stick together. We must start holding these organizations and also people who claim to be our leaders. We have to make sure that we hold them accountable. For years, we have done the same identical thing, nothing. We have let them or allowed them to do whatever they want. You pay $30 to be a member of the NAACP, and they give you nothing in return, absolutely nothing. You might get a crisis magazine every 3 months or so, maybe. But you're dealing with an organization that is obsolete. They don't cater to the community. They cater to the corporations. The governor pays them millions and millions of dollars not to do anything inside the community. And believe me, they have not done a thing within the last 50 years. I'm talking about what I know, not what I think. The Reverend Jesse Jackson is the biggest joke that you would ever, ever, ever want to meet. And it's funny. His son is trying to make a plea deal right now to keep him from going to prison. But he's going to prison. Trust me. But we're moving on. These organizations that do not serve our community, we are going to get rid of them. We are going to expel them from our community. We're not going to allow them to be in our community anymore. But listen, let's listen to a little Martin Luther King, and he will tell the story.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its racist, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, we are having a tremendous time. We had the Reverend Dr. Jeremiah Wright last night at our festivities, and I tell you, it was too wonderful to believe. But this time, I got Belinda Brown on the line. Belinda Brown, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Pastor Pinckney. How are you doing today? It's just a great time, you know, that we're in. I'm excited, and it's just good to hear from you. How you been doing?
I've been great. Don't have a single complaint. Everything seems to be going quite well.
Yes, I'm telling you, that festivity that we that you had on last night, the Dr. Reverend Jeremiah Wright, I'm telling you, it was awesome, and I had such a great time. I think that, you know, all the people need to know that we're on the move, we're fighting back, and we're talking strong about the struggles that we're in. So I'm just excited to see how, you know, everybody is doing and that, you know, no one is giving up at this time. We're going to fight back.
That's right, and we're going to continue to fight until we get it right.
That's right.
That's right. Regardless what they say, regardless of what the odds are, we are going to fight until the end. And now what we're trying to do, we're trying to recruit people to stand up and fight. Until they do so, we're going to continue being in this compromising position.
I think that that is the message that we need to send out, Pastor Pinckney, that this is a time that people can know without a doubt that they can fight back and that they can continue to, you know, engage and get other people involved, speaking out against the injustice that's taking place. It's only when we're silent is when it becomes detrimental to us. But when we're speaking out and we're fighting back, it's nothing that they can do. They can't stop us.
That's right. You're absolutely correct. And we're not going to allow them to stop us. That's the main thing. And until everybody take a stand and do what needs to be done, we're going to continue to be in this position.
Yes, that's right. And you know what? I really feel with people like you.
Oh, God.
That people are going to know without a doubt that they have people like you standing and fighting, and that they want to join up with people like you, Pastor Pinckney, that's not afraid to fight back and speak out against the injustice that's taking place across our country.
Absolutely. Listen, I'm going to bring on Brother Victor. Just hold on for a second. Let's talk to him. Brother Victor, are you there?
Hello,
Victor, are you there?
Yes. Mr. and Mrs. Victor is here. How you doing?
How you doing today?
Oh, we one day at a time. All glory to God, you know. And
amen.
I guess the last time we was on, you know, we spoke about a lot of corruption still going with our case. They trying to rush us back into court. We need attorneys to,
you know,
come in.
I may have some good news for you. I'm supposed to be calling tomorrow to find out whether we have an attorney in that area who will handle this case. I've been on the phone all week since we spoke last Sunday trying to find somebody who will come down there and take this case pro bono and stand up for the Victor family. That means we need two separate attorneys. We cannot use one attorney. Got to have two.
We understand as long as they have the same unity that we are fighting together, you know. Like I spoke before, you know, this judge is violating every civil rights and every constitution right, you know, and she's the same. My husband is a developer in St. John, as well as the Judge Bettner is her name, and her husband is the biggest developer in La Place as well. So it's like a competing. They're trying to take everything from him and using what our tragedy, what we went through, you know, and it's just bitter and disgusting how they're doing and trying to violate every right. And she don't care, and she knows it over and over, and she come boldly and said like it doesn't exist, as me being a wife and him being as my husband and him being a man is like it's violating everything we say. She cuts it out, so she violating everything. Not just that, you know, the woman just is plain just wicked, and she's saying that. She the same woman that was had ruled over of that wrongful death suit that we never got served, we never been in court, and she lied upon and perjured that she know nothing about our case, and she does. And this is why I have no fair hearing at all. You have another DA was one of my husband's financial attorney before he became a DA, and he's doing the same thing, not speaking for my husband and all. His name is Kerry Brown, and it's everything we do, everything we've been trying to do, they violated. They're trying to shut our mouth at everywhere. We've been in here 4 years, 7 months and 10 days, and fighting for the injustice they're doing. You know, they took away our children. We're fighting it without no trial, without no proper process of righteousness or anything, because they felt like they want to do that. And I'm so frustrated.
Let me ask you something. You've been inside the jail for 4 years and some days?
4 years. 7 months and 10 days we've been incarcerated.
Wow.
In lasting 4 years, we've been out on bonds. They have took the bond, they have stole the bond, they have violated everything. They didn't give my husband a $2 million bond with a failure to prove, with no cause of death. Everything paid off his innocence of my family. All of it, they just taken and dried us clear. Our home is just like someone ramshacked it now. Our home was beautiful. Everything they took and violated, the property and the investments and everything, they just closed everything out and said they have the power to do that, and it's violated. We don't even know. Every day we've been fighting, we don't know where our children. We have 13 boys, and we got about 3 standing right now. We're still with mom, and they done pulled us all apart, and it's just overwhelming. We need help more than anything in the world. I've been chained about with my husband, standing with him. They're deliberately trying to shut my mouth to speak of his innocence over and over again. And every time I speak, it's getting worse and worse, but I'm still standing because he stands for me. We trust God, and they don't care about nothing, but they care about their own, their money, their power. And the only people that's doing something is we thank God for people like you, Mr. Minister Pickney, and Miss Belinda, all these people doing great things for us. But it's hard, and we're fighting it. It seems like we're fighting it alone for 4 years. Mm-hmm. We need help.
Let me say this, Miss Victor. Like I said, I have been on the phone constantly trying to locate an attorney who would take this case pro bono. And also, I'm going to be on the phone. I got a connection in New York. I actually started in Detroit. Then they gave me New York, and they're going to give me somebody down there. What I'm doing now, let me make sure I'm saying the right thing. Are you? How close to Baton Rouge are you?
Glory to God. Glory to God, brother. How you doing? This Minister Victor.
Yeah, hello, Minister Victor. Before you go, I want to know how close to Baton Rouge are you?
We're 30 minutes from Baton Rouge, and we're exactly in between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, equal distance.
Equal distance.
About 30 miles, 35 miles from New Orleans. Takes about 30 minutes to 40 minutes from New Orleans to our location.
Uh-huh.
Equal distance from Baton Rouge to New Orleans.
Okay. Okay, well, that gives me more of a thing. I was telling your wife that I was on the phone all week trying to locate an attorney who would take this case pro bono and try to help you out. But here's the issue also. I'm going to need 2 attorneys and not one.
I'm looking
to see who will do it and who won't do it and cross their names off.
I know you've been counseled that we need 2 attorneys instead of one, and that if they're working in concert together in harmony and unity, that would be acceptable. But, you know, if not 2, we need 1 to consolidate our defense as a joint defense. And there's no way we have to go into this trap they call in the court, which is a kangaroo court, with our kidnappers. We can't go through that traumatic experience one more time. Brother, you got to understand, we've been in front of the court, over 100 court hearing and proceedings.
You
without
have 1 minute left.
Over 100, and that's not with any exaggeration. If they check it, that's a Guinness Book record. That is abuse in of itself. They've dragged me to court over 100 times, compelled me against my will, and denied us a right to bail while they were doing that, while they took our bond money repeatedly and paid over 8 bonds, paid over $4 million they're still having. And then now they want to say we're scorning in dishonor. Well, we have been in front of those people over 100 times. Enough is enough. I'm not going to play with my kidnappers and pretend we have in court while they ignore me as a citizen, our constitutional rights, our civil rights, and our human rights inalienable. They don't acknowledge you as a people. You're like an animal. You're like a pack of dogs rather than a family. They've divided my children like it was 1930, and it was slavery, and that was all the 1800s we was on a plantation, you see, and give us no parental rights. Where we could defend. They did what they want with our
Thank
property.
You for using Securus. Goodbye.
Am I still on?
You're still on. Go ahead.
Yeah, they did what they would want with our property, with our money, with our life, with our freedom. And the people stand around and they spectate. And the spectators are worse than the people doing it. Because it's just inhumane for people to know how wrong this is. On its surface, on its face. You don't have to be a lawyer to know this wrong. And they're standing around and they're spectating. We need 2,000 people to send in $10, really. I mean, this is what the Lord led me to say, 2,000 people that got a heart, that got some love around the country, who can that God would prick in their heart, send us $10 for 4 weeks, just $10. Mm-hmm. And if they do that, that'll afford us the resources to get an attorney here, and we can move to action rather than conversation. They've heard our story. We need help. We can't go. They want to drag us into court Wednesday without proper due procedure, without any filing any kind of. They've ignored us as defendants, and they just handcuff us and drag us without no sufficient notice for hearing. We get our service 15 days after everybody else, court over, then they serve us to come to court. They're doing every tort actions they can do against a person without any liability whatsoever. They slander my name across the nation and defame my character with no resistance. They've said things like my children ran to the railroad track with center block. Never happened. The attorney just allowed it. They've put me on the internet, America Most Wanted. The attorney told me, don't worry about that. I'm in a murder case, and they're trying to make a monster out of me in the media, and they've controlled the mind of the people by using the resources they have, and I have these sick and incompetent attorneys standing by me, these conspirators, telling me, don't worry about it. And they're taking all your clothes off, and they're going to stand you in court and say, look at this naked man, and you can't defend yourself because the attorneys allow them to strip you naked and then have a defense, we have a naked man. And these are all fruits of poisonous trees, you see. And they're creating a case while they have you hostage. And they're taking away your rights, your privacy, your secrecy, everything. There is no constitution. And then they're going to say they have a case. The only witnesses they got in this case is 17 detectives after the fact. But there's not a witness to anything because we don't do crimes. We're just a family that had a tragedy. And so they're putting us in jail, and through their instruments, they're using their different instruments of the law enforcement to create themselves and impute themselves in the case, and then acting like they're witnesses to a case. And it's all framing, man. It's nothing. I don't do crimes, man. Mm-hmm. You know, so you know, it's just a framework, and then they're packaging it up, and they're allowing us to, and everybody's sitting there, professionals watching this. We don't need two attorneys. We need one that have the heart and the see. And to fight the injustice that they're doing. We don't have to defend a criminal case other than the crime they're doing.
Mr. Victor, you know that if you had one attorney, one attorney can't defend both of y'all.
Well, as a joint defense, I don't know why they can't defend both of us because they're accusing the both of us. Neither one of us committed any of the crime they're accusing us of.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? And so,
I don't know the law down in Louisiana in reference to that. I know here in the state of Michigan, when there are two defendants, you have to have two separate attorneys, even though they may be man and wife.
No, well, we waive conflict, and we don't have one attorney to represent the both of us on previous occasions.
Uh-huh.
So they're able to do that because they indicted us on the same charge out of the same set of circumstances at the same time.
Okay.
And so as long as they didn't sever the indictment, then one attorney can have a joint defense. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the whole thing is divide and conquer. And, you know, the Bible says, a house divided cannot stand. And the
absolutely,
kingdom divided
absolutely.
Itself cannot stand. So,
and
when God
to
put
this.
Together, let no man set asunder. So we're not letting
absolutely.
Them separate us.
And you know,
we're
I do understand that they have falsely accused you of murdering your child. And we know that your child was sick. And, you got a couple of minutes. I want you to tell me about it. I mean, tell the folks about it. But then I want you to let people know where they can send the $10 to. Okay?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how much I can say on Nazi other than that the autopsy came and clarified everything medically, that the child wasn't beat to death like they were saying, or through the chastisement called a fate of death. It was nothing fatal about anything physical as it relates to anything external other than, than what was wrong with him involuntarily in and of himself. So all of this physical organs, internal organs, was intact and all that been proven. And that's why they had no probable cause. The judge had already said, the African-American judge said that they had no probable cause. In the PE, she said that they failed to prove. But yet they still put us back in jail with bonds. And then they had two quash indictments and a dismissal. And on record, here's the African-American judge saying, let these people go on with their life. Y'all been troubling them long enough. This case been going on long enough. She said that 2 years ago. They removed her out of the place, put a white judge there, and preside over the case, call it a new case, which is not a new case at all. And if there was to re-indict, we should have the same judge. So the judge is illegally presiding over the case. This judge has denied that the son is
hot. You have 1 minute left.
33 motions she's denied in a year without a hearing. Without a hearing, without even being able to present evidence. 33 pretrial motions and try to put you in trial with no pretrial motions.
Wow.
While the attorney's in concert trying to participate in that foolishness. Well, I'm not going to walk in no dark blind while you got a bat to hit me back of the head. And they're all working together. You know
Absolutely.
What I'm saying? So this is conspiracy. This is conspiracy. 33 motions denied without presentation and on his face and trying to stick you into a trial. Okay, so we weren't going for that. And the defense attorney was trying to show up for trial, subpoenaing no witnesses. And we got over 20-something witnesses, and he subpoenaed none. He didn't subpoena the doctors. He didn't subpoena any of the professionals, the pathologists, or anything. And then he said, well, he didn't show up for that trial. Well, that was only intelligence not to show up for that. You know,
mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not going to be ignorant and walk while you got a gun
Thank
pointed to my face and say, sure.
Securus. Goodbye.
Exactly, because you know that every time we say the fool will run right into, I say, but the wise will run from it. No defense. They had no type of strategy. They had everything in our favor, and they noticed. We give them everything. We showed them everything, and they had. He was unprepared. This man comes. He comes in his best suit to make sure the victim's being incarcerated in Angola for the rest of their life. Unprepared, he said. Without no hesitation, and he spoke at both. And then that's I'm not coming in there with someone has my life in their hands. I'm not coming in there in the way that I wasn't able to have disaster to fight for my freedom or my children. He was taking all that away from us. He did it with our children, and he was trying to do it with my husband and I.
Mm.
You know, and we, like I said, we need help. If we can get 2,000 people to send $10 for the next 4 weeks, you know, you can address it.
Tell us what you want us to send it to.
What? They tell them to make it. Let them send it to the Victor's Defense Fund, so you'll know it'll be applied to, and to get some professionals in there. And I'm gonna tell you what it's sending. I'm gonna tell you the address, but we don't need to go in Code Wednesday in this traumatic experience again by they ignoring us and dividing us and doing what they're doing again and being raped and violated again. We need an attorney to come in there with us to give us a voice and be a spokesperson for us. Yeah. And
okay.
So it won't be ignored as human beings.
Tell us where to send
the $10. Give him the P.O. box. Give him the P.O. box.
The P.O. box is 342 Reserve, Louisiana 70084. P.O. box 342 Reserve, R-E-S-E-R-V-E, Louisiana 70084. One of the numbers that you can call also is 985-703-0677. You can give a Miss Belinda number, baby, if you have it.
I think Mr. Pigney, I don't have it on right now. Mr. Pigney can tell them if they don't send it there, at least put it in care of us to the LUI organization, Ms. Belinda Brown, and you can give them her information over the air. I'm out of the cell right now, and I don't have that information on me. But if the P.O. box is what my wife said, and if they can't, at least send it to the LUI organization in care of the victim funds, but we need an attorney here one way or another. We don't need to walk in that court as husband and wife and be violated and stripped and go through another traumatic hearing, inhuman hearing, with our kidnappers pretending they have in court, humiliating us again. We need an attorney to go in there. We need a collective. And I want you to know, Brother Minister, that we can have one attorney to represent us as a joint defense in this case.
Okay, real good, real good. Listen, Belinda, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Pastor Pigney. You know, I want the victims to talk about, you know, how the corruption.
You know what? They don't have any more time at this time, but we'll get back to them. But I want them to give us an address where we may send some money to. That way you'll get a hold of it. That way we'll know how to help the victors.
Okay. The address is LUI. It stands for Louisiana United International. The P.O. Box is 2181. P.O. Box 2181. Slidell, that's Slidell, S-L-I-D-E-L-L, Louisiana 70459. The zip is 70459. And you can call me anytime at 985-503-0626. That's 985-503-0626. Please, Pastor Pinckney, they need help. These people need all the help they can get. And it's a whole lot more to this story than they're actually taking the time to talk about. You know, it all stems from corruption.
Yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. Belinda, I'm sorry, but we don't have any more time for the victor. We got to go to Burn Baby Burn. It's time for everybody to burn your NAACP card. And I will get the victors back on next week, and we'll talk some more about it. But here's the most important thing. Let's get together and send the victors a few dollars. If we can do it, then we can be able to maybe help them and get them out of jail, out of prison, or wherever, or keep them from going to prison. But right now, it's time to burn your NAACP card. Those who have one left, it's time to burn, baby, burn. So I'm going to take about 90 seconds, and we're going to burn our NAACP card. All right now. That is the end, and here's the good news. 2,563 NAACP cards as of now has been burned. And on that note, I got to bring on Ralph Pointer. Ralph Pointer, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Pinckney, and today I find myself almost as happy as you are because I see the progress that you are making, that we are making as a people with a problem in terms of solving it. First off, let me talk about your victories and continuing struggle, bringing down Whirlpool with economic sanctions. We don't use that word often enough as a people. You have used it constantly to bring Whirlpool to a stalemate, and you have explained that, you know, often enough to the people that I don't have to explain it. This shows what action can do. You have made people aware of the injustices that are happening to us all around the country. And now we have an educational opportunity with the re-election of President Obama. Now, I must be clear and honest. I did not vote for Obama the first time around, and I did not vote for Mr. Obama the second time around. And what I am saying to people is now that people have given the vote to Obama first and second time, that now they must stop and analyze what did it bring us, what did it bring them. And now they will be, if they want to pay attention and if they will learn, they will learn the difference between a vote in the two-party system and a movement. You, Reverend Pinckney, represent the opportunity to begin a movement, an action to do something. And this is different than a political party. Now, a political party can voice the concerns of a movement, but a movement is when people actually do something such as you are doing. And the main thing that I feel that you are doing is teaching people that they must do it themselves. And in every movement, every successful movement around the world, not only in America, where change came, it came from the people who did it. And in Zimbabwe, it was called None But Ourselves. And around the world, when people have movements, they are the ones that do it. And it's not by voting for a president or a vice president or a congressman. And as you say, here we have an organization supposedly representing us, the NAACP, and they do not. They represent corporations, the people you are fighting, and that's why they attack you, because you were attacking the corporations that oppose us, that do the negative things. And I forget who it was that said, freedom is not casting a vote. Freedom is free from oppression. Freedom is to have a decent job. Freedom is the opposite of poverty. Freedom is to have an education. And you can only do those things by having an action against an oppressive government that is keeping you from having freedom. So now we had the great euphoria of Mr. Obama. And what did we get in Obama 1? What was Bush 3? More deportations. You know, and guess who these people were being deported? People of color, Haitians, Mexicans, etc. Now, he has presented himself as being, after deporting all of these people, he is presenting himself as being on the side of the Latinos or Mexicans, and I'm not sure he was successful as presenting himself as being on the side of the Puerto Rican, the Mexicans, etc., because Puerto Ricans are already American citizens, Mexicans and other Latinos, or was it Romney was so obviously against Latinos? Because we, maybe one program will have a chance to talk about the DREAM Act, and not today, what it means and what it doesn't mean. So you have presented the position of what happens when you act, when you begin to build a movement, when you are the voice of the distresses of the oppressed people. And you have been that voice, and you have taught us we must oppose any organization that uses us, that pimps our vote, that pimps our support, and then doesn't support us. And I think that as long as you continue doing this, people will notice. And I say all of those people, I think it was 97% of black women, 93% of black people, 54%, 57% of white women, you know, voted for Obama. It is their job now to make him do something. Now, they talk about holding his feet to the fire, but we must remember history. And when President Roosevelt made his speeches about doing something for the people, he followed up with action. The New Deal was the action. And here we have President Obama, who has promised, you know, single-payer health care before his first term, and he took it all back. Now we have to say, what is our improvement in terms of health? And this is his second term. You must hold him to that. What is our improvement in terms of education? We must hold him to that. Those of you who voted for him must hold him to that. What is our improvement in terms of economics? Those who voted for it must hold him to that. What is his improvement in terms of foreclosures? And all of these issues are why you voted. And if you don't get the improvement, then you will have the opportunity to compare his statements with reality, compare a political vote with political action that we are following with Reverend Pinckney. Economic sanction, boycott, don't spend a penny that you don't need to spend. Punish those who punish you with their economic policies, as Reverend Pinckney has punished Whirlpool. Punish organizations, as Reverend Pinckney is punishing NAACP. Punish your unions that you pay dues to that do not support you. Punish your political parties and political representatives who bring you nothing but promises. As a matter of fact, what our black politicians bring us is a lie. Their lie is that you elect them and something different will happen. We've been electing them for a long time, and then nothing happens. And then they explain why nothing happens. I've heard a black politician say, yes, you've elected me time after time, but you didn't give me a wide enough victory, margin of victory. And I'm saying, wait a minute, you win or you lose. And if we support you and you win, then we want something. We don't want to steal from anybody. We don't want to take anything from anybody. We just want the promise that we received when we participated in this American dream. And we must begin to say, is it all dreams? And I remember, you know, you opened the program with Martin Luther King, and I remember right before King died, he had met with the athletes who were talking about the Olympic boycott in Mexico when John Carlos held up his fist, you know, to say, no, America is not what they say it is. And he was killed. He said he was going to be there in Mexico City and support the athletes, you know, in their display of anger with what was happening in America. And he was killed before he got there. This is one of the things that he was doing, that when he realized that there was a difference between the dream and the actions necessary to make the dream happen, and we know what happened in Memphis when he was killed. But this is the education that we must all make a part of our own education. We must get involved in the action. And as Reverend Pinckney points out, each one of these situations of the death and the destruction of the black community must be used as an opportunity for us to rally around the people being oppressed and support them. And in that way, we have movements around the country, because we know it's happening not only in Louisiana, and I just can't imagine this word, Angola, has been a bone-chilling sound ever since I was big enough to read, and I'm 74 years old. And when we talk about Angola and Louisiana, Leander Perez Parish, those parishes in Louisiana have never been more than slave-holding pens. And as somebody said, there are small prisons and big prisons. And you're either in that outrageous small prison in Angola or you're in the big prison of Louisiana, and people had better begin to recognize the difference. And people had better begin to recognize those leaders of us who are not sure who they are or what they want to be. And those who want to be a part of America rather than those who want to change it are in trouble, and they're going to continue to keep the rest of us in trouble until we say no. As Reverend Pinckney has said, we will not support the NAACP that is using us and fights against us when we fight against our enemies. And we must continue this with the organizations, every organization that we support. And as Lynn Stewart, I'm in Fort Worth, Texas right now visiting our sister Lynn Stewart, the lawyer, and I think of these people pleading for a lawyer. You know, Lynn Stewart was so successful that she could do criminal cases for money and do political cases for free. And what we need is some more Lynn Stewarts to come out and look at cases for people and help them. She is in jail, helping people in jail. And every time I visit her once a month, she tells me of outrageous stories of people who should never be in jail and would not be there if they had a decent lawyer. But Lynn says, Ralph, ask the Reverend Pinckney to continue his work in educating people as to what a vote can and what a vote cannot do for you. What a political representative can and what a political representative cannot do for you. And what we must do for ourselves and how we must create a movement. And Reverend Pinckney, your actions are the beginnings, the basis of a movement, stating the problem and working on the actions to solve the problem. We have to, as Lynn says, sweep up the people in recognizing the realities of our time. And she says that if she ever gets out of prison, her first act will be to begin to support those who supported us, our brothers who are languishing in prison for 30, 35 years. And she says that we're not going to talk about nationality, race, national origin. What we're going to talk about is their actions to support us, political prisoners. And this is where her life's work will be. If, and we're going to fight to get her out of prison. And Lynn says, struggle continues. And thanks to everyone out there. And if anyone has time, look up Lynne Stewart. And you will, Lynne Stewart, Stewart. And you get .org. And when you get that, then I think you should go directly to her Minneapolis speech, 2007. And I think it will knock you out, and you will understand who she is and what she stands for. Thank you, Reverend Pinckney, for your time. Thank you. And on behalf of all of the people who need this movement, the struggle continues. Thanks again.
And, Rob, I want to thank you, and I want you to tell Lynn that, you know, that Reverend Edward Pinckney and Dorothy Pinckney, that we love her, and we stand with her. And also, we stand with you too, Ralph. We know that if anything needs to be done, and I'm still looking forward to coming to New York.
Forward to your coming, where we can have more time and have
absolutely
more discussion.
I'm definitely going to go there. And also, I want people to know that I will be in L.A., Hollywood, California, for the Image Award, where we will picket and boycott the Image Award. That is a done deal. I will be there. Ralph, and I want to thank you for all the work you do, and I want to say just hang in there. God is able. Now we got to bring on Belinda Brown. Libby. Libby, are you there?
Yes, I am looking at bhbanco.org. That's Benton Harbor, B-A-N-C-O.org. One more time, bhbanco.org. The blog has found an article that's a little over a year old, and it's from a conservative publication, MarketWatch.com, and it's called Tax Reform Exhibit A. Even though it's over a year old, it's extremely relevant.
Go on, Libby.
And it begins, our liberal friends often complain that U.S. businesses pay too little in taxes, despite the world's second highest corporate tax rate. What they don't say is that one reason is because liberals keep writing loopholes. By the way, I just have to interject here. I'm not sure I agree with the use of the word liberals here, but anyway, this article still makes some good points. Consider how Whirlpool, the giant home appliance maker, has parlayed green energy subsidies to erase its tax bill. Whirlpool Corporation recorded $18 billion in global sales and $619 million of earnings in 2010, but won't pay anywhere near the U.S. statutory tax rate of 35% on those profits. In fact, its effective tax rate will be 0%. As Bloomberg first reported last week, Whirlpool has stockpiled more than $500 million in tax credits for making energy-saving Energy Star appliances, washers, dryers, refrigerators, and so on. The firm gets a production tax credit of up to $200 per refrigerator, $75 per dishwasher, and $225 per washer and dryer. GE has also collected about $200 million of these credits. Think of these energy efficiency, tax credits as a version of the earned income tax credit for corporate America. Except guess what? Whirlpool and GE aren't poor. The deal gets sweeter. Those credits can be carried over from 1 year to the next for up to 20 years. Whirlpool is collecting so many credits that it may not have to pay a dime of corporate income tax for years. The lost revenue from GE and Whirlpool alone far exceeds the $78 million revenue cost over 10 years that Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation predicted for the credits. These appliance credits are in addition to $300 million the feds gave to states as part of the the 2009 stimulus to pay rebates to customers for buying these same goods. So there's one subsidy to make the machines and another to buy them. The Department of Energy says these appliances save families money by reducing energy use by more than half. If that's true, why does the government have to bribe people to make these purchases? Our point is not to pick on Whirlpool, which employs 22,000 Americans and competes with tough foreign rivals like Korea's Samsung and LG. The company is maximizing returns to shareholders by cashing in on the loopholes that Congress writes. Jill Saletta, Whirlpool's communications director, tells us that the energy tax credits, quote, help support our continued focus on investing in high-efficiency products going forward, which is good for our consumers, the economy, retention of U.S. jobs, and the environment, end of quote. She adds that remaining competitive in today's global marketplace is a top concern for Whirlpool. Taxes, administrative, and other costs are higher in the U.S. than in some other countries. And then the article goes on and says, that's for sure, but such favoritism makes the U.S. tax system even less competitive. Tax credits mean little or no liabilities for firms that win most favored tax credits in Washington. But companies without the right lobbyists or friends in Congress pay a punitive 35% rate that even Europeans have long since abandoned. Of course, they don't mention Fred Upton here, but anyway. Special favors like these also create a business constituency against tax reform that would benefit the overall economy. Whirlpool carries its $500 million of unused tax credits as an asset on its balance sheet, so cutting tax rates shrinks the book value of that asset. Scott Hodge is president of the Tax Foundation. He says that's why so many companies actually oppose lowering tax rates. And the last paragraph, the White House claims to want to reduce corporate tax rates in a, quote, revenue-neutral way, unquote, by closing loopholes. Yet it's hard to take that commitment seriously when its new budget proposes to extend the green credit windfall for another year. Whirlpool is one more case study in the need for corporate tax reform. Plus, let me just add that last paragraph, that's an example of the White House saying one thing and doing another. But anyway, so that's at bhbanco.org if anybody wants to look that up.
Hey, that's amazing when you think about Whirlpool. That's why we have to boycott Whirlpool. I'm going to be meeting with people tomorrow from London and from around the world because we have to make this a boycott global. We have to make it an international. We just can't boycott them here in the United States. We got to take it beyond that. And Whirlpool deserves exactly what we're about to give them. And we have to maintain it and stay focused and move on. So thank you, Libby. You're doing a great job. I'm sorry you could not make it to the event last night, but it was off the chain. It was something that you would have been proud of. The only thing I didn't like, the food was moving kind of slow. Other than that, It gets none but A's, straight A's for the journey. Libby, I want to thank you, but I got to move on.
Mm-hmm.
All right now. Listen, 7940, are you there? Reverend Pinckney is here. Go ahead.
Yes, I am. Good evening, everyone. My name is Khalifa Ali, also known as slave name Amy Anderson, but I would like to be recognized as who I am, indigenous original person. Okay, I don't know if anyone has heard of government mind control. Look up the website Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance. It's called FFCHS.com. And what the government is doing, they've been doing this for over 5 decades. They've been using mind-altering technology on people. I know a lot of you have heard of chemtrails, but they're spraying the skies, and they're having, like, barium, titanium, and aluminum spraying it in the skies. And when we breathe these undetectable particles, it's called nanotechnology, and it's going inside our systems, and it's altering our DNA, and that's explaining how they can manipulate our central nervous system with this technology. The intelligent community, like the CIA, the FBI, and a lot of people are participating in this. These private contractors are participating in human trafficking. And a lot of you are aware of the Illuminati's. And Reverend Pinckney asked me to read the codes, and I'm going to quickly read them, let you know how our enemy feels about us. It's the key, look up the key points of the Illuminati code, An illusion, it will be so large, so fast, it will escape their perception. Those who will see it will be brought, be thought of as insane. We will create separate fronts to prevent them from seeing the connection between us. We will behave as we are not connected to keep the illusions alive. Our goal will be accomplished one drop at a time so as to never bring suspicion upon ourselves. This will also prevent them from seeing the changes as they occur. We will always stand above the relative field of their experience, for we know the secrets of the absolute. We will work together always and will remain bound by blood and secrecy. Death will come to he who speaks. We will keep their lifespan short and their minds weak while pretending to do the opposite. We will use our knowledge of science and technology in subtle ways so they will never see what is happening. We will use soft metals, aging accelerators and sedatives in the food and water, also in the air. They will be blanketed by poison everywhere they turn. The soft metals will cause them to lose their minds. We will promise to find a cure for our many fronts, yet we will feed them more poison. The poison will be absorbed through their skin and mouth. They will destroy their minds and reproductive systems. From all this, their children will be born dead, and they will conceal this information. The poison will be hidden in everything that surrounds them, in what they drink, eat, breathe, and wear. We must be ingenious in dispensing the poison, for they can see far. We will teach them that the poison are good, like them injections, people having them flu shots, with fun images and musical tones, entertainment, Hollywood, and all that to throw you off. Those they look up to help will, like NAACP, we will enlist them to push our poisons. They will see our products being used in film and will grow accustomed to them and will never know their true effects. When they give birth, we will inject poison into the blood of their children and convince it is for their help. We will start early on when their minds are young. We will target their children with what children love most, sweet things. When their teeth decay, we will fill them with metals that will kill their minds and steal their future. When their ability to learn has been affected, we will create medicine that will make them sicker and cause other diseases for which we will create yet more medicine. We will render them docile and weak before us by our power. They will grow depressed, slow, and obese, and when they come to us for help, we will give them more poison. We will focus their attention toward money and material goods so they never connect with their inner self. We will distract them with the fornications, external pleasures, and gains so they may never be one with the oneness of it all. Their minds will belong to us, and they will do as we say. If they refuse, we shall find ways to implement mind-altering technology in their lives. I'm a victim. I'm considered a targeted individual, and it's many of us. We will use fear as our weapon. We will establish their governments and establish opposite within. We will own both sides. We will shadow government, own the government. We will also always hide our objective, but carry out our plan. They will perform, we talking about the Freemasons and all these front people we know about who we're fighting now. They will perform the labor for us, and we shall prosper from their toil. Our families will never mix with theirs. Our blood must be pure always, for it is the way. We will make them kill each other, and when it suits us, we will keep them separate from the oneness of dogma and religion. We will control all aspects of their lives and tell them what to think and how. We will guide them kindly and gently, letting them think they are guiding themselves. We will foment animosity between them through our factions. When they shall rise up against us, we will crush them like insects, for they are less than that. They will be helpless to do anything, for they will have no weapons. We will recruit some of their own to carry out our plans. We will promise them eternal life, but eternal life they will never have, for they are not of us. The recruits will be called initiates and will be indoctrinated to believe false rites of passages to higher realms. Members of these groups will think they are one of us, never knowing the truth. They must never learn this truth, for they will turn against us. For their work, they will be rewarded with earthly things and great titles, but never will they become immortal and join us. Never will they receive the light and travel the stars. They will never reach the higher realms, for the killing of their own will prevent passage to the realm of enlightenment. This they will never know. The truth will be hidden in their face, so close they will not be able to focus on it until it's too late. Oh yes, so grand the illusions of freedom will be that they will never know they are our slaves. When all is in place, the reality we will have created for them will own them. This reality will be their prison. They will live in self-delusions. When our goal is accomplished, a new era of domination will begin. Their minds will be bound by their beliefs, we have established from time immemorial. But if they ever find out they are equal, we shall perish them. This they must never know. If they ever find out that together they can vanquish us, they will take actions. They must never, ever find out that we have done, for if they do, we shall have no place to run, for it will be easy to see who we are once the veil has fallen. Our actions will have revealed who we are, and they will hunt us down, and no person shall give us shelter. This is the secret covenant by which we shall live the rest of our present and future lives, for this reality will transcend many generations and lifespans. This is how our enemy feels about us.
Absolutely. That is really, really amazing, Miss Ali. You know, when I first heard it, I was shocked. Is there any way that you could send that to me in an email?
I sure will. And Ken Rose, he's working with us as well. And you know his last four numbers because he has something to share about the black community, what he know that Caucasians are up to doing to us. And this is a strong white man who care about us and care about himself. He know he has to join the fight. And do you have his last number, four numbers, brother?
I believe I do. 6062.
Yes.
Okay, but let's.
Okay,
I will send
that to you, brother, so you can put it out there and let this sink in our people's head, because we have to come together. We are the ants and they are the grasshoppers. It's more of us than them. Thank you.
Amen.
For
thank you very much. All right, then I'm going to move on. Mary, are you there?
I am here, Reverend Pinckney, and I want to let you know that Freedom Ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. I want you to know that we are disgusted with Jesse Jackson Jr. claiming mental illness for his criminal charges. I am Mary Neal, Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. We have actual mental patients who are incarcerated at the number of 1.25 million people in this country. And to have these people go to court and use mental illness to avoid incarceration is completely wrong, because we have plenty of mentally ill people who are incarcerated right now throughout America. Some of them are on death row. So Jesse Jackson Jr. should not be exempt from going to jail, even if he's able to prove to the benefit of the people who want to keep him out of jail that he is mentally ill. We had another mentally ill black man to be killed in prison this week. Every week I am able to tell you about mentally ill people who are slaughtered in America. This man's name is Elliot Williams. He died incarcerated in Tulsa, Oklahoma jail, where he, upon arrest, they say he bammed his head into a steel door. They say that Elliot Williams ran his head into a steel door. Now, I haven't seen a video of that, so we'll reserve judgment. In any case, he proceeded to be put in isolation in that Tulsa, Oklahoma jail, and he stayed there in isolation without food and water until his death 5 days later. So being mentally ill does not exempt our people from being incarcerated, brutalized, and murdered. So Jesse Jackson Jr. should not be exempt from going to jail, even if he proves that he is mentally ill. I want to say congratulations that the elections are over. I'm very glad they're over. But you gave the president, the present administration, the idea that, okay, go right ahead with your concentration camp plan. Go right ahead and plan concentration camps for American citizens. So while the election returns were coming in on Tuesday, the United States Department of Justice filed its brief in support of concentration camps under NDAA. And it filed that brief in response to Judge Forrest having declared military detention without trial to be unconstitutional. That was put on hold, but the Obama administration went forward and convinced the higher court that they needed that power to keep people in concentration camps without any criminal charges and without any opportunity for defense. So right now the door is open to do that. But in order to make the door open permanently, they had to file an appeal against Judge Forrest's decision. So on Election Day, while you were happily and gleefully voting for the president and for other elected officials who also stood in a line with the president on the right to incarcerate people without any criminal charges and without any opportunity for defense, this administration went forward and filed its brief in support of military detention without any criminal charges and without any opportunity for defense. So I have that, and I have your press release, Reverend Pinckney, about Whirlpool Corporation and about your intention to go to Hollywood, California, and picket the NAACP Image Awards. I want everyone to know that my last time at an NAACP-sponsored event, I picketed the NAACP here in Atlanta last year on Martin Luther King birthday celebration. I picketed the NAACP, and it was I had a sign that said "Wrongful Death of Larry Neal." So right outside of the hotel where they were having that big event, the NAACP, I was outside with a sign that said "Wrongful Death of Larry Neal." How many of the people going in the event do you think asked me what happened? How many of the people do you think asked me about this wrongful death? These people are aligned with the system that oppresses you. They are firmly aligned with the system that oppresses you. Another time when I was at an NAACP event, I went to the town hall meetings that were held here in Atlanta after the wrongful house break-in of Katherine Johnston, a 92-year-old Atlanta resident, a woman who the police broke in her house and shot her in a hail of 36 bullets. Six of them hit her while she lay dying, bleeding on the floor. The police handcuffed her and planted drugs in her home to excuse their break-in. Actually, I believe they went there to rob her. The initial charges against these police officers included robbery. That was an armed robbery. But they tried to make it seem that Katherine Johnston was a drug dealer. Anytime black people are killed by police, the idea is to turn the cards on us and make it appear that we are the criminal. So this is something that they did not neglect to do, even when they broke in the home of a 92-year-old black woman. I went there to alert the NAACP that the Cochran firm, which they had gotten to represent the survivors of Katherine Johnston, had just gotten a court order saying they did not exist in the state of Georgia. That's right. The Cochran firm got the judge at Georgia Superior Court to give them a court order saying that they don't exist or do business in the state of Georgia. That is a lie from the pit of hell. But you see, the enemy has learned something, Reverend Pinckney. They've learned a long time ago that the best whipping boys are other black people. The best whipping boys are other black people. And so they recruited the Cochran firm to make fools of black people in their cases in order to keep wealth out of the hands of black people. They do not intend for many blacks to end up with victories in their court cases. And that is the plan for anyone who the people sick them on. They win some cases, but they throw the fight in others. I went there to show the NAACP and all the so-called black leaders in Atlanta that the Cochran firm had just won a court order saying they didn't exist or do business within the state of Georgia. I gave that document to the leaders of the NAACP and other so-called black icons here in Atlanta, Georgia, because they had just thrown the fight in my brother's case regarding his secret arrest and murder in Memphis Shelby County Jail. That is the court order that went down to dismiss our lawsuit. I wanted to warn Katherine Johnston's family that they had been delivered into the hands of traitors. But the next morning, my car was vandalized. I woke up to go to work, and all of my car doors were open. My hood was up. My trunk was up. but nothing was stolen from the car. That was simply to let me know that I was not to go forward and tell people about the Johnny Cochran firm fraud and their partnership with the NAACP to keep the lid on and keep people complacent and quiet while our people continue to be killed by police and continue to be robbed. So this is the story on the NAACP. This is the story on the Johnny Cochran firm. And this is the story, unfortunately, on the so-called black icons that people revere here in Atlanta, Georgia. And so you need to be careful and not look at the color of the skin when you are trying to determine who are your friends and who are your enemies. There are white people like Lynn Stewart, who is incarcerated right now, but taking a stand that benefited all people who are poor and oppressed, including black people, very closely. And so there are black people who you think are your friends who are actually enemies working for enemies. And you need to stop judging people by the color of their skin. That is the truth today from the Stone Mountain, Georgia, where I let freedom ring. And I thank you, Reverend Pinkney. I want you to know that you can look online for Mary Loves Justice emails. That's human rights news from Mary Loves Justice emails to find out more about other situations that you need to know about having to do with human rights in America, which black people are deprived of. In fact, I have a court order from federal court saying that crimes against my family, such as the secret arrest and murder of my mentally ill brother, Larry Neal, such as the Johnny Cochran firm defrauding us, holding our wrongful death case secretly enacted while the Tennessee statute of limitations passed, and such as the frauds that went forward in court to protect that firm from our fraud lawsuit, saying that those crimes are all immaterial. Therefore, I want to let you know that black people are considered immaterial. Families of mentally ill people, and they kill the white ones too, but the difference is when they killed Kelly Thomas, who was a white homeless man in Fullerton, California, when they killed Kim Saunders up there in that prison in Michigan, they did pay those families. They did give them a fair court process. They did report those deaths in mainstream news. Black people, they simply feel that they can suppress us. They feel that they can simply censor us. They feel that they can simply send police to your home, as they did mine, that threaten you if you tell about their lynching. And so that's the difference.
Hello?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I did. Listen, you got about 30 seconds. Say whatever you want, and we got to move on.
All right. Well, thank you, Reverend Pinkney. I want to let everybody know that that the mentally ill are the most oppressed people in this country, black and white. I want to thank Reverend Edward Pinkney for allowing me to bring you news about these oppressed people every week. And also, I want to urge you to please go online to BHBANCO, B-A-N-C-O, and make a donation, a generous donation, to keep the fight alive. You're not out here marching. You're not out here carrying banners. You're not picketing the NAACP. So please, help the ones who are. Keep the truth alive. Keep the fight going. Please make a generous donation to BANCO today. Thank you ever so much.
You're welcome. 6062, you're on the line. Go right ahead.
Yes, Reverend Ping, this is Kenneth Rhodes. I'm a 68-year-old. Yes, I'm a 68-year-old white male. Sister Ali introduced me a while ago before you took the other call. I'm a victim of what she was talking about, MK Ultra, and people can Google that up and look at it. In 1975, Bill Clinton made an apology to the nation, and that's on YouTube. You can Google it up. Talking about how big a crime it was, it should never happen and all this, but today it's still going on today. Even in 1977, Senator John Glenn said, you or your family may go to the hospital and come out and experiment. And we call ourselves TIs, but really I think we're a victim of domestic terror by our own government. And what they, this technology they're using on us, they plan on using on all the people, black, white, we're all humans, and no matter what color your race or what you are, we're all going to have to stick together to do this. What most people don't realize that they're going to turn this technology on everybody when they get the New World Order in. And maybe you don't realize it. Maybe your listeners, they think this is way out there, and it is way out there. It should have been stopped. It should have never been started. It should be stopped immediately. But what they do to the TI is we get the electronic torture. In other words, in your own home in America, you can't see it, you can't smell it, but you can damn sure feel it, I'll tell you that, when they hit you with it, and I get that every night. And then a lot of American citizens work with this. It's through InfraGuard, Neighborhood Watch. They get told a lie, just like Hitler told the brown shirts in Germany, that you're doing something good for the government. These people are recruited. They work against us, and actually they're working against their own self. And the same thing is going to happen to them that happened to Hitler's brown shirts. Once he seized power, he had every one of them killed. So anybody that gets involved in on this and helps them do this evil stuff that they're doing, they can look for the same future for themselves down the road. In the early 50s, our CIA gave Dr. Cameron out of Canada millions of dollars to study mind control, erase the memory, and put in new memories. Well, when you start erasing somebody's memory and trying to put in a new one, you're playing with God there. You're playing God, and I don't believe nobody's got the permission to do that. And also in the TI communities we call ourselves, we've been finding a lot of microchips in people. I think you spoke with James Walbert the other night. He spoke on your show when we had a conference call. And I'd like to bring him on next Sunday and let him talk. He's found microchips in his body, but yet when we go to court, we can't do any, no court will even listen to us. If you go to police, they say we're mentally ill. Well, I've never been to a psychiatrist in my 68 years, and I'm everything but mentally ill. And I could go on for hours, but I'd like to get into the black people. And, you know, we're giving up our freedoms in this country for Al-Qaeda. They're our enemy. But yet our government uses Al-Qaeda in Libya and Syria. We work right with Al-Qaeda. Our own government does. And when they took over Syria, they lined up thousands of black men and shot them and killed them, thousands of them. And you can Google that up. It's all on the internet. A lot of people, Alex Jones out of Texas, every day he's on the news and he talks about this all the time, what they're doing to black people. So all your audience should Google up Alex Jones and listen to him. This man's a white male. He's 38 years old. He knows his history, and he believes in black people just like he does white people. He says, my kids can't be free unless every racist kids are free. And I thank you for your time, and next time I'll come on a little bit better prepared, but I really appreciate your time, Reverend Pinckney.
And listen, I want to thank you, too, and also I want to thank you for the tapes that you sent. They are tremendous. I tell you, I'm going through them one at a time, and I'm excited, you know, that people have this information and have this much knowledge in reference to things like this. We know our government is doing a lot of bad things to a lot of people. We know that they go behind our back and do things. And also that mind control thing. They have been trying to control the people for so long, and now they got that chip that they can insert into you and make you act like you're crazy.
Right. Well,
I know that for a fact. Mr. Rose, thank you so much. And I want to tell you, you make sure you be on next week, okay?
Okay, let me tell you real quick. We went to Washington twice last year in New York, like 50 of us at a time, and testify in front of the bioethics. I sent you that DVD of that. And
right.
you'll hear people talking about what they're doing, but yet the general public refuses to believe this. They can't let their mind go that far. It's just like if you believe in abortion or you don't believe in abortion, if a woman has an abortion, she thinks at the time it was right. But later on in life, when she figures out it's wrong, she knows she did it, so she can't release her mind to believe that she did something that bad. And that's what the people they get to work with them, once they see that what they're doing is bad, they can't release their mind to stand up for us because they can't do it. I mean, it's terrible. This mind control is really bad. But thank you for your time.
All right, then. Take care now. Elvira, are you there? Elvira.
Yes, I'm here.
How you doing today?
I'm hanging in there. And I went to court, and they threw it out, threw that silly thing out that I shouldn't have never have had to go in the first place. But I want to thank you and thank everyone else, and I hope that you with Legacy of a Nation, I would like to hear you and your group joining in and listening to what they're saying, having to say as well. And I want to thank you for being there, and thank you for everything that you're doing to help people.
Elvira, tell me, how you feeling now?
Not well. I need a doctor really bad because the doctors here, they're trying to hide what's really wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, that leaves me where I cannot get the treatment that I need. And I'm telling you, I need treatment ASAP.
Mm.
Because when those trucks come by again, you know, and my eyes are about gone, it's breaking my teeth out, it's my tongue, my hair is coming out, and my throat is very dry, and it burned my skin, whatever it is, I don't know what it is that they're spraying on me. And then when those trucks go by, you know, I don't know what that is, but I think the people need to know that they could be affected by this. I do know that it takes the potassium out of your body. That's one of the things I know. And it caused the internal bleeding. In the house that I was in, the hospital, Geneva Hospital in New York, that is a very bad hospital. And also Life Care. It's the family practices. These family practices, when you go in to see a doctor, first thing they want to do, they want to take your picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, oh, no, uh-uh. My group don't believe in that. And these doctors, they need to be, we need a group of people coming in, especially in Geneva and Waterloo, and see what's going on there. It is scary. Very, very scary. And if nobody don't stop it, it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And I decided that I'm going to stay here as long as I can. Even my social worker, everybody works against me. I'm trying to find some pro people in this part of New York. I'm near Buffalo, in between Ithaca and Rochester. I need some good people to help me expose what's going on in these hospitals and these doctors' offices, you know, before they, you know, if they want to, you know, I do what I do for our children and our children's children. If this stuff is not exposed, because I am a TI, an unwitting victim, just go to that website, unwittingvictim.com. That is a very good website. It shows where even President Clinton has apologized, but that's all he has done. He knows about all this, but he haven't done anything, only for a handful of people to shut them up. But we keep coming out like flies on you know what. And we're around the world. This is a global issue. And I want to thank you, Reverend Pitney, and I hope you join with Legacy of a Nation one night, you know, when you do your Sunday show. Transfer over to his show because he have a 7 o'clock show, and we can really make a difference. And they also with the Million Women. Empress.
Absolutely. Listen, I gotta let you go, Elvira, but hey, you know we love you. I want you to stay focused and don't get sidetracked. And I know about that mind controlling thing. So what we got to do, we got to figure out, we got to work together and attack this situation. And that's what we're about to do. Listen, I got to let you go.
And I'm promoting
Dr.
you
Randy
on chat
Short.
Rooms, too. Thank you.
All right, now. Dr. Randy Short, are you there?
Yes, I am here. God bless you and everyone listening. And I need to say this, Freeland Stewart, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. You hanging in there too?
Yes. I just finished talking to Dr. Alzita King, niece of Martin Luther King, and she's going to work on it. She wants to be out there on February 1st.
Absolutely.
It's a great idea. Talk to Cynthia McKinney about it. She says it's a great idea. I don't know if she's going to come, but we need to invite her.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, she'll be out in L.A. sometime.
Quite a bit. I'll reach out to D-Don and tell D-Don we need to see if we can have Cynthia out there. Also, I think you're aware, Reverend Shirley Moore, they're looking at having a Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and one of its first actions will be picketing the Image Awards February 1st.
Absolutely.
I'll let her call in. I know that she may be on the line, but she said she would come in. I want to mention and repeat, you and I talk all the time, but Reverend Al Sampson.
Yes.
Reverend Al Sampson talked to you, and looks like we got stuff going on from Detroit to Philly. There's a gentleman by the name of Ajamu who I will be writing him tonight. He works with this group of African socialist movement, but he's got young people all over the country. He's got a group in L.A. and all over. They're also in Michigan. They would like, once I put this together, I believe we'll get some young people, because I'm very concerned about that. I'm excited to get a body of young people that are interested in doing this. And let me segue right to this group. One thing that I want to make people aware of, there is a group called the Citizens Committee for Human Rights. They fight to prevent folks from doing mind control and drugging and torturing and killing mentally ill patients and so forth. They are starting a national chapter. You can be anywhere in the country, but the national office is here in Washington, D.C., and, of course, I am going to be active with it. And Reverend Pinckney, you know that they're drugging our children in the schools.
Yes, yes.
In fact, this is what's happening with the Leach family.
Mm-hmm.
They on the 5th, they had a trial, and they didn't have anything on Afdel Leach. But, you know, they've demanded that Jesse and his wife take their son to jail, and then he'd be transported from jail in Concord to another jail in Raleigh, where they'll hold him for 72 hours for psychological evaluation. Now, we thought he had a bomb. We thought he was, they said he wanted to blow up the Democratic Party convention. They said he had concealed weapons. They said he resisted arrest. But they want to check his mental state on their premises, and they take him back to the same jail where he was tortured. They put their knee in the boy's spine, which caused numbness in his arms. You heard him on your show. And it's just an example of how this police state is taking every freedom that we have. And I was just here on the internet, and, you know, I got some NAACP dirt for you. I know you love that.
I love it.
You know, one of the companies that manufactures these psychotropic drugs that destroy our young people is none other than Squibb Myers. Well, how many people know that Squibb Myers gives money to Axo?
Mm.
So they kill our children with some of their activity, and they give a few bucks to the NAACP National for Axo to make it seem as if they love our people. And that's right up on Google. Don't be lazy. Put in Bristol Squibb Myers. And then put in NAACP, put in AND in capital letters, AND, put in AXO, ATC hyphen SO, then put NAACP in caps, and you'll see the same thing. It doesn't take a whole lot to do research. I get mad because we black folks that study and try to investigate. We have folks who don't read, who don't use their mind, then come back and question us, and then when you bring them the information, they still don't do anything with it. So I'm now thinking, if at least one pharmaceutical, and I'm looking at other ones right here while we're doing the show, if these pharmaceutical companies that are behind having children taken from their parents, put in foster care where they're raped and abused, if they're giving small grants to the national NAACP, is it any small wonder
why the national NAACP has not nationally come out against the psychological torture and destruction of our young people through the pharmaceutical companies that give them money on the sly.
Oh, you're saying a whole mouthful.
Well, no, it's just there. It's just there. That's one company. There are about 10 companies. All you have to do is go to Wikipedia, pull up the top 10 or 11, and I'm going to go company by company to see which ones have given the NAACP some money. I'm on Johnson & Johnson right now. And that will explain why in the state of California, the NAACP supported doing something to stop people from drugging and just telling our kids that they're crazy and putting them on these things that make them commit suicide. They get a record for being crazy. They're ineligible to get work. But the NAACP hasn't done it nationally. And I have to wonder, is there a profit motive? Is there money? Are they selling out our young people yet again? Not the little individual chapter presidents that may be crooked or sexually harassing or abusing someone's wife, but the big folks like Boy Jealous and the other crooked people here in D.C. and Baltimore. Are they getting money at the expense of the destiny of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of our people who are being experimented on in schools and in child welfare systems and within prisons? Mm. Why the silence?
Wow.
Come on, Boy Jealous, tell me. Tell me why they have nationally gathered our people. Where the rate of suicide for young black children has gone through the ceiling with these drugs being forced on them. People being put in jail because they're not forcing their children to take drugs or kill them. Or the teacher says that they didn't get enough drug, they felt so. And as they remove black teachers from the school systems across the country, you have white kids who don't necessarily understand black kids. They come to teach for America and everything else. As they systematically get rid of black principals and black teachers. And you get these folks who can't handle kids from an urban environment, and they decide kids being kids are crazy. So you put them on drugs, and you threaten their parents. And this is happening in every major city. It happens in New York City. It happens in New Orleans. It happens here in Washington, D.C. And children and families are destroyed by the profit motive of the same people who ran the slave trade. It's a new thing, but it's the same thing. Steal and kill and destroy and run all the way to the bank laughing. Because they're doing it to the poor, they're doing it to the defenseless, and always with the complicity of whether it's the caboceer or the black neck or whatever kind of traitor it is in our community for pennies. It used to be booze and glasses and guns and bullets and brass rods and pots. Tactile. Now it's a little bit of cash for a program like AXO that does some good, but how many young people are destroyed when the NAACP nationally looks the other way?
Absolutely. I tell you, that is truly, truly amazing. Listen, you got about 60 seconds to say whatever you want, and we have just ran out of time. Go ahead with
it. CCHR.org online, look it up. CCHR.org. Look it up. When you find out about it, if you're interested, contact Reverend Pinckney. Direct him to me. We're going to stop them from drugging our kids. We're going to stop them from enslaving our children.
Absolutely. And we're going to be in sunny Hollywood, California, February the 1st. Be there. We will be picketing and boycotting the NAACP. And here's the thing. We now have 2,586 cars has been burned.
Amen.
2,586 cars has been burned. The word is getting out. They're spreading the word. They're telling people about it. And next week, I will burn my NAACP hat, and I'm going to put it on YouTube so everybody can see it. So those of you who no longer have an NAACP card, you can burn your hat, your T-shirt, or your jacket, whatever you wish. But next Sunday, it'll be burn, baby, burn. And on that note,
We have just ran out of time. Thank you so much for listening. And I tell you, we are really on the move. God bless you all. Talk to you next week. Take care, Randy.
You're welcome.
All right.
Bless you.
And Ralph, take care of yourself. Mary, take care of yourself.
Thank you, Reverend.
Spread the word.
You too.
Yes, and next week we will be back on again. God bless you all, and we'll talk to you in the future. Bye now.
Thank you, audience. Thank you for listening.
Yes. Thank you.